This is ESPN Radio.
Hour number two on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, that's where we got to go now to bring in our friend, our resident Philadelphia sports fan, Sports Center anchor, and host of the ESPN College Football Podcast, Kevin Negande. And Kevin, we got a sneaky big matchup down at the link with the Eagles taking on the New Orleans Saints. And I felt like this is a good opportunity for us to ask you about Jalen Hurts. In the last 4 weeks, no quarterback in the NFL has had a higher QBR than Jalen Hurts. So to this point in the season, has he done enough to show you that he deserves to be the future franchise quarterback for this team?
Oh, Chris, that is such a loaded question. We start out the gate here.
Yeah, man, I got to do it to you.
I've got to say this, Chris. Jalen Hurts, what we're seeing in the last 4 weeks is they're not throwing, and this is Nick Sirianni as the play caller, they're not throwing the kitchen sink at him to say, all right, you're going to carry 90% of the workload that we saw in the first 6-7 weeks of the season. You're scratching your head and you're like, this guy hasn't even made double-digit starts, and why is he carrying this type of workload? And the one thing that I know the evolution of the NFL is now pass first, pass second, and then think about maybe the run. But in reality, this team has changed. The dynamic of the team has changed when they have been able to run the football effectively. And that offensive line can eat, man. They've got some big boys up there that love to push the line of scrimmage forward. And with Jalen, I think when you can pick up a couple of yards out the gate and get him comfortable, he's not trying to do every single thing on offense. And that breathability has allowed him to kind of flourish over the last 4 weeks. And I've got to give Sirianni credit because he is now adapted and adjusted. And he has watched Jalen Hurts, grow. And I was about to use the word blossom, considering this is the head coach who talked about planting flowers and watching things grow in the soil. But it's worked so far, and it is a positive thing. Devontae Smith also has played a role the last couple of weeks. They've allowed him to be comfortable with who he is, and they're not making him into something else. And that, I think, has allowed Jalen Hurts to explore a little bit more and have more patience when he's rolling around in the pocket and not to panic and just run. And over time, there were a couple of balls that we saw in that Denver game where I was like, now we could see it. His accuracy past 20 yards is now becoming more and more evident. He was really inaccurate when it came to throwing the football down the field. And if you can't do that, you're favoring the defense. So right now, Chris, I think it's fair to say with 7 games left, the door is wide open the next year. And we weren't feeling that way, I think, 2 months ago. And then couple that in with the draft class that's coming out right now, there's no clear-cut quarterback that we've seen over the last 2-3 years where not just the number one pick, but there's no number two or number three pick overall that you feel, oh, that's clear-cut, that's the guy. And the Eagles are in a position right now that they should explore because they have so many other holes in that roster that they can address with at least 2 first-round picks next spring.
Kevin, when you described the game plan for Jalen Hurts right now, it reminds me a lot of what we've seen from the New England Patriots with Mac Jones, right? It feels fair to compare those two to me. Looking at New England, especially what we saw last night, Kev, have you been surprised how quickly we have gotten back to a place after last year where the Patriots are once again a viable seeming juggernaut waiting for everyone in the AFC?
No, and what they're doing is it's a combination, right? That the Patriots don't make mistakes. They wait for you to make the mistakes, and then they capitalize. I think that's the difference in any successful team, and that's been Bill Belichick's way, especially managing through a horrendous AFC East over the last 2 decades, right? Wait for the other teams. Eventually, they're going to make mistakes, and then we will seize the moment. One thing that we have seen with Mac Jones, and we saw that last year throughout, those high-scoring games with the Alabama offense, his accuracy, that's the one thing that is translated here to the NFL. He is accurate. He's smart with his decision-making, and I'm not surprised. But the reality is the Patriots, That defense is really, really good. And now you can see who they played and make a case, but hey, it's not their fault. They've just taken advantage week in and week out over the last 5 weeks of building that confidence. I mean, Stevenson's been fantastic in the backfield, and I just think that it's all coming together, and they're also, guess what, guys? The AFC East has a ton of doubt. The Bills haven't beaten a lot of quality teams, and look at the Jets and the Dolphins, something we've seen over the last 10 years.
Kevin, what do you think the ceiling is on this Patriots team?
Oh, I mean, I think the AFC is wide open right now. If we're talking about this season specifically, Chris,
yeah,
I would say get in the playoffs, dangerous team to play in the first round. I wouldn't want to play them just because of Belichick and Josh McDaniels. And I think they have the chance to win at least one game, because no one has separated themselves in the AFC. And we feel like, well, I think the nugget we're going to have on SportsCenter tonight with my interview with Mina Kimes is 16 teams in the AFC, 12 of them in that conference are .500 or better. So there's a lot of parity. There's no team that you feel like, all right, they're clear cut, we're good, I feel confident about them. You don't have that vibe about anybody in the AFC.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to 6 o'clock SportsCenter anchor Kevin Negandhi on the Goodyear Hotline. Kevin, I want to switch over to the NBA right now. So looking in the Eastern Conference, it is a very strange leaderboard at this point with some of the teams that we have got in contention right now. We know the 76ers that you're a fan of sitting at the 6th seed, and it's been about who's not on the court for them. Kevin, based on what you've seen so far and based on the landscape of the East, has moving Ben Simmons, has finding a viable trade partner sooner than later, become more or less urgent part of the conversation for Philadelphia?
I think it's less urgent. I think that when you see the way the East is set up, I mean, we're not even in December. To me, I'm not panicking if I'm a Philadelphia Sixers fan, because one of the things that we've seen in the last 2 weeks, especially with COVID hitting the team, the depth that the Sixers have, you know, past the 6th guy, the 7th guy, the 8th guy, has really stepped up. I mean, Tobias Harris missed some time because of COVID. Of course, Joel Embiid. Andre Drummond's done a very good job. And you know, Maxey's been a phenomenal find there, you know, with the 21st pick in the draft last year. I think Daryl Morey's done an excellent job of finding pieces and parts, right? And then the Seth Curry trade a year ago. The kid is incredible. He's better than advertised, and he's the shooting that the team needs while Maxey brings the energy. I think the Sixers are in for the long haul here. I don't think they're going to blink. Morey's not going to just move Ben Simmons to move Ben Simmons. He won't be bullied into a rash, irrational decision. He's going to make sure that he's going to get some quality back. He's not going to try to waste Joel Embiid's best years in front of him because he knows he's in a small window. And I think Joel's on board with that, where he's just like, do what you got to do. We'll move on. We'll figure it out till we get the quality we need back in a trade. And I don't think Morey's going to blink. He's not going to panic. That's the one thing I think the message has been sent to everybody around the league. I don't think he's going to be asking for the sky like we saw this summer. But at the same time, he's not going to settle for, you know, a guy that's going to be the 7th and 8th player on the bench. He's going to make sure he gets an impact guy that they need to fit on that team, because the chemistry on the Philadelphia Sixers right now has not been better in the last, I would say, decade.
Advantage Sixers in the year-long staring contest right now with them and Ben Simmons. Go and stare, speaking of that, at your televisions. Watch Kevin Negandhi, L. Duncan, and the rest of the crew on the 6 o'clock SportsCenter, and check out the ESPN College Football Podcast wherever you get your podcast. Kev, always a pleasure, man. Have a great show tonight.
Appreciate you, fellas. Hope you have a great weekend, and happy Thanksgiving to all.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family as well, Kevin, coming up. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection for more than vehicles, with insurance expertise to keep your company moving forward. More at ProgressiveCommercial.com. But coming up next, when some people split up, they write a great album. They make a ton of money off of that. They live long and prosper. When others split up, they lose a ton of football games and have their future in doubt. We will grade some of the breakups that we have seen in the NFL next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want you to chime in on the Dr. Pepper line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Want to take your calls on sports breakups and who won them and who lost them. And Gojo, we got to take it there with Week 11 upon us, getting started last night between the Falcons and the Patriots. And we got a couple of breakups in the NFL that happened this offseason that we absolutely got to run through and determine who the winner was and who the loser was.
Yeah, listen, I mean, listen, it's been that kind of, I don't want to say week, Chris, but we had, you know, Red re-released by Taylor Swift, which was a premier breakup album back in the 2010s. We got the Adele album coming out right now, certainly a breakup album for her. We know a lot of what's going on with her relationship here. And both of them have come out and are in a very good place right now. We want to celebrate that. So we thought we'd take a look at some of the more notable breakups from this past offseason here. Chris, I want to start with a couple of easy ones here.
Okay.
Because I don't think there are any losers or winners when it comes to Sam Darnold and the New York Jets breakup. Sam Darnold now firmly riding pine with the Carolina Panthers in favor of Cam Newton, and the Jets have their head coach challenging their former head coach to passive-aggressive fights on radio shows. Do I have that right?
Not quite. There's clearly a loser in this one, and it's Sam Darnold. Like, with the Jets, it's still TBD. We don't know what Zach Wilson is going to be. We don't know what Mike White is going to be, but at least they have some viable options in terms of guys that could be starters in the National Football League. I think that ship has sailed when it comes to Sam Darnold. Like, we wanted to blame Adam Gase for all the problems that we saw from him in his 3 years in a Jets uniform. And when he went down to Carolina, it was all good for the first month of the season. But then Christian McCaffrey got hurt, and the real Sam Darnold decided he was going to stand up. And it just so happens that it's not a version of Sam Darnold that Matt Rhule nor David Tepper is going to be in love with. So, like I said before, Sam Darnold is going to be the most expensive backup quarterback in the NFL in 2022 because it's clear to the Carolina Panthers that he ain't their dude.
He is not their dude, although he can take solace in the fact that this is probably going to land him a nice, cushy Blake Bortles path to backup success in the NFL.
Hey, listen, that's good work. That's good work if you can find it now, Mike.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if he's technically lost a ton here, but if you're looking to start games in the NFL, that's not going to help you. These two, I think, work in tandem, Chris, as we look at breakups. Jared Goff and the Rams, Matthew Stafford and the Lions. And it seems like everybody that resides in Detroit right now finds themselves on the losing end of these breakups.
Yeah, I feel like we got to channel our inner Denny Green with this one, with Jared Goff. He is who we thought he was, which is why Sean McVay traded two first-round picks that he didn't even have. He traded two future first-round picks in order to get rid of Jared Goff, convince the Detroit Lions to take on that contract, and to send them back Matt Stafford. Like, that to me is just a sign of, we know this guy ain't that good, and we got to get rid of him if we're going to have a chance at being able to get to where we want to go, which is the championship rounds. Jared Goff ain't good enough to get us there no more because we have such a top-heavy roster. So we're going to go ahead and go with Matt Stafford, and we'll see where we land. And I think that we can call the L.A. Rams one of the top 5 to 7 teams in all of football. So clearly they won the glow up when it comes to the breakup.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty grading the breakups that we've seen in the NFL so far this season. And I think you're right. The Rams win this one going away. They also live in Los Angeles, which we're not here to city shame, but SoFi looks pretty
nice.
You're
doing it. You're doing it, though. But you know what you're doing.
I'm backing into it slowly because I don't want no parts with Detroit. I appreciate what Jalen Rose and everybody have done in the city of Detroit. It's a wonderful place to visit sometimes. I just didn't want to go there for a bowl game in 2008. Sue me. That is not my fault. Chris, it was the Hawaii Bowl or the Motor City Bowl my freshman year at Detroit. And I'm sorry, Melikalikilaka is the thing to say when you are in Hawaii near Christmas Day.
Absolutely, absolutely. I played in one of those Oahu Bowls, too, and I can tell you I would much prefer that over going to Detroit any time of the week, any time of the year.
Now, Chris, this one is a little more complicated, I think, because we had a breakup earlier this summer from Cam Newton and the New England Patriots. Now, the Patriots appear very much winners. Mac Jones seems like someone they're excited about. We're talking about them as this building juggernaut in the AFC. But Cam Newton got the green light, got to go back home here, is going to get a start this weekend. It doesn't seem all bad for him.
No, this is an amicable split. This is one of those where you genuinely wish the other one well. You might pick up the phone and have a conversation every now and again just to check in to see how the other person is doing. Like, there's not a lot of animosity there just because of where Cam Newton landed, which is back home with the Carolina Panthers, a franchise where he gets to tout the fact that he's the most important player in the franchise's history. So, yeah, I think both sides can say they feel good about where they're at. If I had to say that there was a clear winner, I would go with the New England Patriots just because we know Mac Jones is going to be a long-term thing, and this could be just a fling with this second go-round with Cam. But based on where Cam is at in his career, he might be fine with just having a fling. You know, sometimes you have a breakup after a long-term relationship, and you're not looking for anything serious. That could be where Cam Newton is right now in terms of his NFL career. Just saying.
Cam Newton went DM sliding, and he got the answer that he was looking for. And sometimes it doesn't have to be anything more than that. Bill Belichick's still going to throw him a couple of double taps when the pictures come up, and nobody is feeling some type of way about this. Now, those are all breakups that have had a little bit of time in between them, Chris. I feel like the Browns slash Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr., we're going to have to wait a little while because both of them have taken some pretty serious lumps since that split.
Yeah, but I think I would like to say that there was a clear loser with this one, and I'm going to go with Odell. And I know you're going to ask, why are you going to say that after just one game? Well, if you took a look at the game last night with the New England Patriots and seeing how good that defense is, and seeing how accurate Mac Jones is with throwing those passes in between the numbers on those crosser routes and those slants, just seems like with an organization that would have featured you as their number one option, their number one target in the passing game, and a team that looks like they're poised to not only make the playoffs but to go on a deep run, that might have been the way to go over the L.A. Rams. Because I got to say, it just hadn't looked right the last couple of weeks with Matt Stafford in the bunch. I just have more trust in Bill Belichick. And if you had a choice between the two, maybe from a football perspective, the Patriots would have been the better option. So, I don't know, man. I just feel like with this breakup, Odell might have lost because he might have made the wrong decision on where he went.
Yeah, had a lot of options here. We will wait and see if it pans out. Again, going to Los Angeles is fine, and that offense can hum, but we're starting to see some cracks up in that front foundation in that offensive line. Those. Go ahead, Chris.
So I'm clear. Odell is winning off the field, though, because it is L.A.
Yes, yes,
like
yes.
We said again, it is L.A. So he's winning off the field, but we're just talking about strictly football.
And this is, there are always layers to these things. These are complicated relationships and emotions, and that's why we leave them to the experts like Adele and Taylor Swift to perform in the majesty of song so the rest of us can understand here. We're brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, though, we have to echo a reminder of why it is never, never good to go cheap. We will do that after this word from Indeed. Now, we get it, guys. It's your business, and you want to be involved in all of the decisions, especially who to hire. Well, then you need Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. I get to do this a cappella. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes fit on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. So spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Back after this from Tampa on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline, and that's where we go now to bring on Tampa Bay Times Buccaneers reporter Rick Stroud. And Rick, yesterday we got the news late in the afternoon that Antonio Brown had been accused of obtaining a fake COVID-19 vaccination card. That's what his former chef alleges. Now, we know that the chef is actually pursuing some debts that were not paid by Antonio Brown. But what more can you tell us about how this impacts Antonio Brown's status with the team and how the NFL league office is looking at this accusation?
Well, in the short term, it doesn't impact his status at all. I mean, you know, a couple things. One, he's injured. He's trying to battle back from an ankle injury. He still could be another week or two away from that, so he won't play in Monday night's game against the Giants. As far as his future goes, look, the NFL is aware of this story. They're certainly looking into it. You know, and I think that it, whether it takes a lot of time or not remains to be seen. I mean, there is a bit of a safety issue here. When they put in the protocols, they let the teams be responsible for deciding and determining whether these vaccination cards, you know, were legitimate or not. And, of course, there's stiff penalties for the players. It is a felony as well to utilize one of these. But out of the 32 teams, they didn't have a single incident. And, you know, I mean, just common sense would make you think you're naive to think that somebody that didn't want to get vaccinated, given the protocols that are placed on non-vaccinated players, might attempt to do this. In the case of his chef, Ruiz, was more than his chef. He was a guy that was really in his circle. He trusted him with his girlfriend. He trusted him, you know, with his $300,000 car and his house keys. So I don't trust anybody with any of those things, and I don't have a $300,000 car. But I think he was in a position to witness things. Certainly there's a string of you know, text messages from Brown's girlfriend going back to July. Ruiz says that he actually was in the home in Tampa when Brown told and showed him these cards that he had purchased. And, you know, now it's up to the league to determine whether this card is legitimate and then whether Brown can continue playing or not.
And so, Rick, to that extent here, the timeline for this, have we gotten any indication of how long this is going to take for the league to determine any of this?
No clue. And in fact, it's going to be difficult. And this is one of the problems with vaccination cards. I mean, you know, there is a privacy loss, even for the NFL. You know, these cards will have a lot number, they'll have a date, and they'll have a location. And, you know, you could take some of that information if the player would allow you to confirm that's the location where the player on that date was vaccinated. You can do that in the state of Florida. But there have to be some cooperation. I would think they would ask for it. And, you know, it just all depends on how, you know, this is a reactionary league, right? And the NFL tends to react to things when things aren't right, then they fix them. I think this is something that you're going to see stories about, not just related to Antonio Brown. I think there's probably a sense that there are probably more players that have or attempted to do this. And you can't, you know, to some degree, the Bucs, you know, maintained they didn't do anything wrong. I mean, these cards look fairly normal. Some of them are handwritten. Unless you're going to go about the process of checking where each and every player was vaccinated against the cards, it's going to be difficult. But the real thing, you know, is that, you know, it's a safety issue, right? I mean, you don't, you know, a lot of people talked about Aaron Rodgers, and I think the Packers knew he wasn't vaccinated. And inside the building, he practiced those protocols for an unvaccinated player. But if you're a player who's gone and gotten the vaccine and you trust the guy next to you is vaccinated, you're trying to protect your family, you know, your relatives, all of that. And, you know, if somebody is not vaccinated but trying to pretend they are or pass themselves through as vaccinated, you could become infected. I mean, Antonio Brown, and look, there are breakthrough cases, no question, all throughout the United States. But Antonio Brown was one of the first players to get COVID. And he did it by week three. He missed the game against the Rams in Los Angeles and was out the full 10 days. He wasn't able to have two negative tests within 24 hours apart to get back. So he was out the full 10 days. So, you know, you just want to make sure people are safe. And in this case, according to somebody well within his circle, yes, he has an axe to grind. Yes, he's owed money. But if we start lining up the people that Antonio Brown owed money to, it's going to be a long show.
Rick, switching gears and focusing on actual players on the field. I mean, the last couple of weeks, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers haven't looked like themselves. They dropped two in a row, and Tom Brady has had multiple turnovers in each of those losses. Now, I know there's been a lot of guys that are out of the lineup, but what are the people inside the organization saying as to the recent struggles from the Bucs?
Well, I mean, there's a couple. I think injuries are not insignificant. You know, look, they were down at one point to their seventh corner the other day against Washington, and that's not a comfortable place to be. You know, when a team can take the ball and hold it for 19 plays in this league, that is rare and it is not good. By the same token, you know, I think that, you know, in the Washington game in particular, look, they've made mistakes. The first play of the game, they jump off sides, you know, O.J. Howard, it gets you off to a bad situation. The turnovers, the penalties, a lot of these mistakes are self-inflicted. There's no question about that. Brady was absolutely blasted on his third-down pass attempt in the first series by Jonathan Allen, you know, in Washington. It changed his whole demeanor. That's the routine. If you can hit Brady, especially from an inside position where, you know, he can't see a guy went off the edge and go down in the fetal position. He got hit hard. And from then on, it was check down city. He did not throw the ball down the field. He got rid of that thing quicker than he normally does. So, you know, there's a lot going on, but the bottom line is, and it's, you know, any Super Bowl team is always going to get 2-6. It doesn't matter. You're 6-2. That's their Super Bowl. You're going to get their best shot. What the Bucs haven't done, and Jason Pierre-Paul said it the other day, they have not given a single team their best shot. And part of it is because guys like Gronk and Brown are out of the lineup, but it's no excuse. You know, they have not played. And I really do think that there was a feeling, at least last Sunday, that they were just better than Washington. And even though they had struggled against them in the playoffs, they were going to walk on the field and they were going to win. And they found out you can't just do that. Any team can knock your block off if you're not prepared, and they were not prepared.
And that was very evident in all of this, and we know the last thing the rest of this league wants is a ticked off Tom Brady, and it sounds like they have found their way to that reality here. Rick, we appreciate the time and the insight on all of this. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times reporting on the Buccaneers. Again, had the reporting about Antonio Brown being accused of using a fake vaccination card for COVID-19. We'll have more on that as it gets updated, and we will certainly look ahead to some of what the Bucs have coming up in their schedule. But coming up next, we got to look at who's going to be on, and more importantly, who's going to be off the field this NFL weekend, as well as the stupid rule they're going to have to operate under. Next on ESPN Radio.
All Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Tune in to a football doubleheader Sunday as the Vikings host the Packers, followed by the Cards at Seahawks. Coverage begins at noon Eastern on select ESPN radio stations. And Mike, going back to the NFL, we've got news today that they released a memo that reiterates the emphasis on discouraging acts of taunting and disrespect. We touched on this a little bit in hour one, but I think we got to go back to it just because I feel like there are people in the room that are talking about this new point of emphasis for the NFL that just don't get it. And what I mean by that is from a generational standpoint, from an entertainment value standpoint, this is what's in the best interest of growing the game. Being able to allow players to show more of their personality is only going to appeal to a younger demographic. And let's face it, that's where you're trying to go in terms of being able to get more eyeballs on your sport. Like, I understand the bottom line for the NFL is robust. It's as good as it's ever been. But business could always be better. And being able to appeal to more sports fans, more casual fans, as an entertainment product is the way to go. And the only way to sell that is by allowing players to celebrate and allowing their personalities to come out. I just feel like the NFL is missing the boat when it comes to this new point of emphasis and not letting guys, you know, kind of go right up until that line, literally up into that line with Cassius Marsh on Monday Night Football against the Steelers and actually celebrate their wins.
Yeah, but Chris, you just mentioned it there. I don't think there's anything to really brush them back on this, right? Like, the continued outrage, every time it happens, it is going to be the same formula we've seen so far. We're all going to get on the microphone and almost universally roast this. We're going to see it trend on Twitter. We're going to see officials named and ridiculed in all this. And then the league is going to sit there and look at their TV ratings. And the league is going to sit there and continue to watch the money pour in. And the league is going to sit there and attach NFTs to Thanksgiving Day tickets for the Lions and do all these things that are going to make them more money in certain spots. But what's weird, Chris, is you're right. They make all of this money because at the end of the day, the game is something that people have loved for so long, and the game is now something that people can gamble on in more accessible ways than maybe ever before. But there are still a lot of old school ideologies that get to call the shots and watch money get made in spite of everyone going against their sensibilities. And we've seen time and time again, when those people get in the room making these decisions, the competition committee, some of the old heads in the league, we end up getting a lot of stuff like this that they don't ever really get checked on in a meaningful way.
Well, that's why diversity matters, right? Not just from an ethnicity standpoint, but actually from an age standpoint as well. And being able to have younger folks in the room to give a different perspective, I think it could benefit the league in terms of making sure that they're keeping their eyes on the bigger picture, which is continuing to grow the game, continuing to dominate the North American landscape when it comes to sports. Like, the NFL wants to maintain this pole position that they have, this stranglehold that they have when it comes to the premier entertainment sports product. And I just feel like when you don't promote the players, when you don't allow them to show emotion and to show a little bit of their personality in those moments where they make big plays, then that could dumb down your product, and that's not necessarily in the best interest long term. So I just, you know, and then another point that you brought up with the sports gambling, I mean, when you start talking about some of these taunting penalties potentially deciding the outcome of games, I think that adds another layer to this, because no fan out there wants to see their bet go left just because the refs threw a flag from a subjective call. So that's the other part of this that feels a little sticky if you're the NFL, and it's something that they have to address. It's something that they have to look at, because, again, I get where they were going. The genesis of this was seeing the lower levels of sports, particularly college football, have some dust-ups, some brouhahas that led to the NFL examining its policy when it came to taunting and wanting to set the right example for the younger players. But at the same time, man, nobody wants to see the refs throwing a lot of laundry on the field because guys are celebrating and having a good time, especially if that celebration doesn't incite any type of altercation with the opponent.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. And, yeah, Chris, the hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching for, oh, think of the kids, is that always feels like a straw man thing, too. Like, I know kids watch a lot of this, but, damn, you want to talk about representation of younger folks. They're seeing so much different stuff here and exposed to so much different stuff. Having the internet, having phones in their hands now from an early age.
Yeah, if they
age,
got like, social media, man, they're seeing worse on Worldstar, bro. Like, I mean, honestly, what are we talking
though,
about?
Like, I think people think we're joking about that, but Chris, like, when you and I were coming up, there were a lot fewer access points to all this stuff. And if you wanted to sell me on the, you know, a more outsized influence of things like watching there and getting it all from there, you could do that, but man, you have literally got a little propaganda box in your hand almost every day that you're getting this stuff flashed in front of you on. So they can kind of miss me with all that hand-wringing. What it's going to take, though, Chris, what you just mentioned with this impacting a game in a meaningful way is, like any other rule that we have seen in the NFL take shape, it's going to have to affect the outcome of a playoff game, right? It's going to have to be one of these coaches on the competition committee. Because we saw, you mentioned representation. Mike Tomlin is as young, as cool as anyone I can think of in a head coaching role. And he has come out in support of this rule. He recently benefited from it, and he lives in a building with Art Rooney, so I can understand why that comes up. But if that guy all of a sudden, or if Sean Payton, or if any of these other guys are on the opposite end of this in a meaningful postseason game, I bet everyone starts to sing a different tune.
Oh, absolutely, because the NFL doesn't want anything to happen to jeopardize the integrity of it and take away from the actual entertainment value. And if they feel like it rises to a level where the call is so outrageous that it distracts from, you know, the other, you know, good things that the league has going on, the other games that are going on, then it absolutely would become a problem that they would address. But again, when it comes to rule emphasis, the NFL picks and chooses what rules they want to do in any given year. I think that this is just one of those things that they did just to say they did it.
Speaking of affecting money, coming up next, we'll try to affect your money in a positive way with Chris Felica next on ESPN Radio.